Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
At 9:57 p.m. on January 7th of 2021, a security camera mounted on a neighbor's house near the Millett family home in Chula Vista, California, recorded something, not video of a person, not footage of a vehicle, sound, a series of loud banging noises, reportedly as many as 9, coming from the direction of the house where Maya and Larry Millett lived with their 3 children. The recording was discovered later, almost by accident, when the neighbor was reviewing footage after the camera had also picked up audio of children playing outside earlier that evening. The FBI eventually examined the audio. Their conclusion, they could not confirm the sounds were gunshots, but they could not rule it out either. That ambiguity, the space between probably and definitely, is the ghost that haunts the entire case, because 3 hours after those sounds were recorded, all digital activity on Maya Millett's phones stopped. Her phone had not generated a single data point since 1:25 a.m. on January 8th of 2021. It has never been found. January 7th was a Tuesday. For Maya, it was supposed to be an ordinary day in the final stretch before her daughter Lara's birthday party that weekend and her appointment with a divorce attorney the following Tuesday. She went about her business, made her phone calls, bided her time. She sent messages. Everything about her digital activity that day looked like a woman who expected to be alive the next morning. At 1:11 a.m., Maya sent her last known text message. It was to Ricky Lincoln, Larry's uncle, often referred to as Uncle Rick. Simply said, "Thanks, Rick." At 1:16 and at 1:40 p.m., she placed calls to 2 law firms. One of those firms called her back at 5:48 p.m. A receptionist at that firm would later testify at the preliminary hearing that she spoke with Maya about divorce. Maya had an appointment set for January 12th. She was 5 days away from walking into a lawyer's office at 2:03 p.m. She had her last communication with the man that she had been seeing. The coworker Larry had become obsessed with their messages, according to testimony, had been constant, daily, and personal. That communication ended on January 7th. At 8:15 p.m., Maya sent her last known message to anyone, a Facebook message, a post to family members sharing a listing for a toy hauler. It was casual, unremarkable, the kind of thing you'd send while scrolling on the couch, half watching TV, thinking about weekend plans. This is interesting. There's nothing in that message, nothing in its tone, its content, or its timing that reads like someone saying goodbye, because it wasn't. Larry's day looked very different. He spent much of it in communication with his work supervisor, a man he'd been confiding in for months about the deteriorating marriage. Text messages introduced in court showed Larry sharing screenshots of things Maya had sent him, including her declaration from the day before that she didn't want to be his wife anymore. So he's advertising this out there to other people. At some point that day, Larry sent the text prosecutors would later describe as really telling. He wrote that he thought Maya wanted him to snap, that he was shaking inside, ready to snap. And then she's gone, and you're telling people that you're about to snap. Interesting. Interesting way of not concealing anything, Larry. At 4:40 p.m., Larry sent his final email to a spellcaster regarding Maya. It was the last in a months-long chain of escalating requests, from love spells to bone-breaking hexes. Quite a menu, isn't it? And this one asked to make Maya miserable without him. 2 minutes later, at 4:42 p.m., a surveillance camera captured Maya's Jeep Rubicon pulling up to the curb outside the Millette home. She parked, she got out, she walked towards the front door. That's the last time any camera in that neighborhood recorded Maya Millette moving under her own power. Between 4:42 p.m. and 9:57 p.m., in a window of roughly 5 hours, whatever happened inside that house happened. The children were apparently home. Neighbors reported hearing them playing in the backyard at some point that evening. After the banging sounds are recorded, Maya's phone continued to show some activity into the late evening hours. Her last data session ended at 1:25 a.m. on January 8th. After that, silence, total, permanent silence from a woman who was, by every account, constantly connected to her phone, texting, posting, messaging, scrolling. She was a social butterfly to a certain extent, a woman whose digital life was active and continuous every single day, suddenly dark, gone, in the middle of the night. And then came January 8th, the day that, according to prosecutors, Larry Millette spent not going to the police, not calling Maya's family, not driving to a hospital or a friend's house to look for his wife, but driving somewhere. For a very long time, with his phone turned off. Here's the timeline as established through testimony and digital evidence at the preliminary hearing. At approximately 6:35 a.m. on January 8th, Larry's phone stopped recording events. Surveillance footage from the neighborhood shows the family's black Lexus GX 460 leaving the Millette driveway at approximately 6:45 a.m. But before it left, cameras captured something else. Larry repositioning the Lexus so that the rear of the vehicle was not visible to any camera. He backed it into a spot where whatever he loaded or unloaded from the back of that SUV couldn't be seen. Then he drove away. He was gone for approximately 11 hours. His phone remained off. No calls, no texts, no data, no location pings until approximately 6:33 p.m. During that entire window, his work supervisor was trying to reach him. Family members were trying to reach him. Nobody could get through. His phone wasn't just on silent, it was off for the entire day. Larry later told investigators he'd taken his son to Solana Beach. Detectives checked. They reviewed surveillance footage from the Solana Beach and Torrey Pines State Beach. They contacted lifeguards and state park officers. Nobody could place Larry or his son at either location on January 8th. The weather that day was 63 degrees and foggy. Not exactly prime beach conditions, especially for a man who claimed his child was wearing a wetsuit. No corroborating evidence of any kind was found to support Larry's claim that he went to the beach. What investigators did find was the mileage. Vehicle surveillance service records, rather, showed the Lexus had been serviced in early December of 2020, and the mileage was recorded. When police impounded the vehicle on January 23rd, they recorded a mileage marker again. The gap, the miles between those two data points that couldn't be accumulated or accounted for by normal use, fell between somewhere between 444 and 692 miles. That's not a trip to Solana Beach, which is roughly 20 miles from where they live. That's a trip to somewhere much further and back. The SUV's infotainment system provided one additional clue. It recorded a navigation event at 3:29 p.m. on January 8th, a route back to the Millette home address. The DA later told the public during a press conference that this meant Larry could have been as far as 2.5 hours away before he started heading home. Quote, I am giving this information so the public understands we do not have a vicinity for where the body may be, D.A. Summers Stefan said. It may be out 2.5 hours or may be further or closer. And that's why we need the public's help. I think about that statement there for a moment. The district attorney of San Diego County stood at a podium and told the public, we know he drove somewhere far away with his phone off. On the morning his wife disappeared, and we don't know where he went. And we need you to help us figure it out, all out, because that's probably where Maya is. That's not how you talk about a missing person. That's how you talk about a body. Larry returned home at approximately 6 p.m. on January 8th. Maya's brother, J.R., came to the house that evening to check on his sister. Nobody in Maya's family had heard from her. And she was, by every account, someone who always was reachable, always communicating, always in contact with the people she cared about. J.R. arrived and Larry told him he'd just gotten home from work. That was a lie. Evidence introduced at the preliminary hearing showed Larry did not go to work on January 8th. He was gone all day in a vehicle with hundreds of unexplained miles on it, with his phone turned off. Larry also told the family that Maya had locked herself in a room the night before, January 7th, and hadn't come out since. She was upset, he said. She needed space. Framed it as a marital spat, a cooling off period, the kind of thing that happens in marriages. The family accepted it. For the moment, they went home. They came back on January 9th. This time, Maurices wasn't leaving without seeing her sister. She and other family members insisted that Larry opened the door to the room where he said Maya had been for 2 days. Larry opened it. The room was empty. No Maya. Her phone was gone. Her Black Navy Federal Credit Union credit card was gone. Her Department of Defense identification card was gone. No note, no identification of where she'd gone or when. Just an empty room in a house where a woman had supposedly been locked away for nearly 48 hours while her husband drove hundreds of miles with his phone off and then came home and told her brother he'd been at work. Maurices filed a missing persons report with the Chula Vista Police Department that same day, and Larry, that same day, had a conversation with a neighbor that investigators would later find very interesting. He told the neighbor he'd taken the Lexus to Anza-Barango Desert State Park, a different story from the Solana Beach claim he'd given investigators earlier. Anza-Barango is a massive desert park in eastern San Diego County. It's roughly 2 hours from Chula Vista. It's a place the Millet family had camped at before. It's remote, it's vast, and it sits squarely within the radius suggested by the infotainment navigation data. Then Larry asked the neighbor to detail the vehicle, to clean it. Get somebody else in there. His wife is missing. He has just told a neighbor he drove to a remote desert park the day after she was last seen, and his next move is to ask someone to clean the inside of the car he drove there. Canine units later swept the impounded Lexus. They did not detect human remains, but the vehicle had been in police custody since January 23rd, 15 days after the trip, and potentially after the detailing Larry had ordered. Every text message between Larry and Maya had been deleted from his phone by the time investigators examined it. Nothing to see here. Investigators also discovered something else about January 8th that Larry never mentioned to anyone, a computer in one of the children's bedrooms, primarily used by the child, contained a file folder labeled Daddy's Files. Inside were videos of a personal nature involving Larry and Maya, along with a search history similar to what was found on Larry's primary computer. The existence of that folder suggests Larry was using multiple devices, a detail that speaks to either paranoia about his digital footprint or simply a pattern of compartmentalized behavior. Either way, it's another piece of what this portrait paints, that investigators were building one search warrant at a time. So here's what the prosecution has from January 7th through January 9th. A woman calls a divorce lawyer, comes home, and is captured on camera walking towards her front door. Loud banging sounds are recorded from the direction of her house that night. Her phone goes permanently dark at 1:25 a.m. The next morning, her husband repositions the family SUV so the rear can't be seen on camera, then drives away with his phone off for approximately 11 hours. The vehicle logs hundreds of unexplained miles. The husband lies to investigators about where he went. He tells his wife's brother he has... he's been at work, but he wasn't. He tells his wife's family that she's locked in the room when she isn't. He tells a neighbor he went to a desert park. He has to have the vehicle cleaned. He deletes every text between himself and his wife. And when the family forces him to open the bedroom door, the room is empty. No body, no phone, no note, no Maya. The defense will argue, as they have from the beginning, that Maya had her own reasons to leave. Gee, I wonder why. He seems like such a nice guy. That she had a history of temporarily leaving the family. That not every exit from the home was covered by surveillance cameras. That there's no direct evidence, no witness, no DNA, no confession placing Larry in the act of committing violence against his wife. And some of that is technically accurate. Not every camera angle is covered, and no one has testified to seeing Larry harm Maya. But the gaps in Larry's story aren't camera angles, they're canyons. The lie about work, the lie about the beach, the changing story about where he drove, the phone that was off all day, the car that was repositioned, the detailing requests, the detailed text, the hundreds of miles with no explanation. And above all, the woman who told everyone she knew that if anything happened to her, it was Larry. And then something happened to her. Larry spent the next 48 hours lying about where he'd been and asking people to clean his car. No camera in that neighborhood ever captured Maya Millette leaving the house after she walked towards the front door at 4:42 p.m. on January 7th of 2021. Not on foot, not in a vehicle, not at any hour, on any day, on any camera. The defense says that proves nothing because the cameras didn't cover every angle. The prosecution says it proves everything. Because a woman who was planning a birthday party for that weekend, who had a divorce attorney waiting for her on Tuesday, who was in constant digital communication with her family and her friends and the man she was seeing, the woman did not voluntarily walk away from her children, her career, her phone, her credit card, and her entire life without telling a soul where she was going. Maya Millette has been missing since that night. Her body has never been found. The Lexus, the desert, the mileage, the silence, the lies, all of it points in a direction that no one in Maya's family needed a detective to spell out for them. They knew from the moment that room was empty. They knew because Maya had already told them who to look at. And when they looked, they found exactly what she said they would find. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in. Two more parts in this series as we continue to break down this saga. I wonder if this will actually make it to trial. We've had all these delays. This seems like a guy, I'm going to put money that there's going to be a trial. This does not seem like a guy who at the last minute is going to be like, you got me. This almost seems like such a cognitive deluded human being, Larry Millette, in my opinion, that he might actually believe his stories. I mean, the way he's able to move through life without even any hesitation on the choices he makes as being absurd. He moves through them as if he's just ordering the McRib at a McDonald's drive-thru. You know, I mean, it's just everything is just, leave a review for the spellcaster. It's not even going through his mind that you're ordering spells to be cast on your wife spells that could harm you believe, and the spellcaster maybe believes that they could harm her, and you're going to leave a review. I mean, this to me would be like a covert thing. I would think, I mean, if you're going down this road, wouldn't you like that be kind of on the DL? Wouldn't that be like, you're not like advertising that you're doing? I mean, if you truly think that that's going to work, I mean, essentially you're using like a spellcaster as a hitman to a certain extent. So if you, I don't know where you find a hitman, but let's say there was a hitman website. Maybe there is on the dark interwebs. I don't know. But let's say there is for a moment. Let's say it's a setup. Let's say it's a sting by the FBI. I think there's a fake website for this. And they've caught people that have been trying to get real hitmen because people are that stupid. You go and leave a review. That's not somebody operating with a full deck of cards. There's something not firing their right, and it's not an excuse. And in no way do I think this man is so mentally deficient that he doesn't deserve consequences. He deserves everything he gets and a broomstick too in prison. But I do feel like there is such a distortion going on in this brain that I think it's a level he believes it. Maybe it's not 100% of the time. Maybe he goes in and out of believing it, but I don't know. There's something very off. Very off. Interested to get your thoughts in the comments. We'll continue the conversation there. Press subscribe wherever you get podcasts so you don't miss any of our coverage of this. And when the trial comes, when it happens, we got you. Hit subscribe so you don't miss it. We'll continue the conversation, like I said, in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join, shop your favorite brands, and save. Target, Instacart, Expedia, Macy's, Sephora, CVS, the list is long. Save online, in-store, and at over 22,000 restaurants. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose PayPal, check, Bilt points, or cash out with gift cards. Eligible American Express card members can choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. Terms and conditions apply. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, order dessert. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. November 2006, a college football star on his way to NFL dreams, gunned down in broad daylight.
Just bawling, crying, and he said, "Coach, they killed him."
No weapon, missing witnesses, conflicting accounts, and for years, no arrest.
She insinuated that the Miami PD had done nothing, and it became a little bit more accusatory.
The case goes cold, rumors spread, and the truth gets buried. Until now.
His world could come crashing down. According to him, it was over.
The ending, something no one saw coming. Because this story isn't over yet. From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. Binge the full season right now, wherever you get your podcasts.